Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight we are on episode 256, and we thought we'd talk a little bit about our fears versus danger. So what is a fear and what is danger, and what should we be thinking while we're out there in the woods? Because honestly, for newer folks, even seasoned people, there's a lot that can go on when you're alone in the woods that you can potentially perceive as a fear. And I guess my final question on this topic, hopefully by the time we're all done talking, will be, is it just an irrational fear because, you know, you're just scared of it? Or is it a fear that's seated in an actual danger? And I mean, these two are going to blend together pretty good. I understand that. But I guess, is it a danger with a high percentile of happening? Have you ever heard like the high frequency or what is it? I'll think of it. It'll come back to me and I'll say it abruptly. But anyway.
High likelihood, low risk?
Yeah, that's it. But so is there, what should we be afraid of in the woods? I guess is what it's going to come down to. You know what I mean? And this is going to change a little bit from time to time. But I think there's a lot of things that people perceive they should be scared of in the woods. And really, you should just have a healthy respect that the potential that what you're fearing might be dangerous if you don't take some precautions.
I'm going to shoot from the hip. I've never done this on the show before, so this will be new for you.
Yeah.
I think the very first thing we all need to be afraid of, me and you especially, is being a little overconfident. And we do this one. We are bad for this because I've been in the woods with you and I know how you act. And we will see a challenge and be like, I can do that. And we will attempt it. So we will try to climb a cliff, or we will try to climb a hill that maybe is a little out of our skill level, or we will be in a boat and we'll be like, I can run those rapids. And those overconfidence could increase the risk of us getting accidents. So I know that people who started listening to this, the first thing they'll go, oh, animal attacks or extreme weather or all these other things that people are going to talk about. These are fears, in my opinion, low likelihood of happening. What is likely to happen, what we should really be afraid of, is putting ourselves in a dangerous situation that nobody knows where we're to, how to get, or we'll be able to easily get out of. And that's generally through overconfidence. People who are nervous and afraid won't do these things. They won't put themselves in these situations. And you want to find a healthy medium, because putting yourself in these situations is where you get the greatest stories and sometimes the best experiences. So how do you mitigate those risks? So I think we'll end up talking about mitigating risks and stuff. But there's my first from the hip, what you'd be afraid of, being overly confident.
And that's kind of exactly where I was going. And I mean, you kind of let the cat out of the bag a little prematurely, but okay, we'll run with this. The true things to fear out there is generally things that you're going to do from yourself. And that's one of the big points I wanted to get across with this. And like I said, the follow-up on this is going to be the ones you think you should be scared of. Generally, you're just going to have a healthy respect for it. As Ben mentioned, animal attacks. That's the number one question I get, or the number one comment I get anytime I tell somebody that I like camping or going out in the woods in general. Oh, I couldn't do that. I'd be too scared of getting attacked by bears or jaguars or cougars or coyotes or wolves, rabbits, flying squirrels, whatever. You know what I mean? But the reality is, it's not the biggest thing you should be afraid of out there. I mean, cougars, yeah, okay, they can be a little scary. But I mean, there's all these things that we need to have a healthy respect for that could have the potential to be dangerous. We can mitigate. You know what I mean? Like, no. I'm not going to go out where there's known cougar sightings. You know what I mean? I'm going to find lower areas. I'm going to take precautions. I'm going to go in places that are going to be marked as, you know, safe or safer or whatever the case is going to be. But now you get into that other side, as you were mentioning, Ben, is you and I, we would tend to push that envelope a little bit. We may be standing on this side of the fence going, oh, yeah, it's nice and safe over here, but do you see that view over there? You know what I mean? And then you can kind of get pushing yourself down this bad path where you're going to put yourself into a danger situation because you have literally completely gotten rid of the fear of it. You know what I mean? And I think these two things go hand in hand quite well. And it all comes down to a balancing act. Hopefully is what we're going to figure out here by the time we're done talking tonight. We have Danny joining us in the comments here, Red Sand Adventures. For some reason, I am streaming here, Ben, but I'm not going to lie. Normally, I got a whole bunch of stats and stuff up here. This is a blank screen. So I think we're streaming. Danny said hi there. If you're still listening, Danny, and you hear this chat here roughly in 8 to 10 seconds, can you just give me a thumbs up in the comments, bud? We're going to continue on as if everything's good and hope for the best.
We are streaming. I do have some. I just quickly checked the phone.
Okay.
I also quickly looked up cougar attacks, and it's listed as very rare. That being said, there was 5 attacks on cyclists down in Washington State. And I don't know what the time frame of that was, but the article was released yesterday. So they can happen. But this quick review I just seen, they generally happen to lone adults or children.
Mm-hmm.
So we generally don't recommend solo trips. This is a question that does get brought up fairly often to us. How do we do a solo trip? How do we stay safer in a solo trip? Your risk in a solo trip is a lot greater than the risk of going with somebody. And by somebody, I mean almost anyone. If something does go wrong and there's a second person there, they can go for help. They can call. If you knock yourself out, they're still there. They can look after you. There's things that can happen. If you're by yourself, it's all on you. And I think your risk is much, much higher. And I don't know if it's a factor 2, 6, or 10, but it is definitely higher by yourself. Animal attacks much more likely on a single person than multiple people. There is safety in numbers. So is that a reason not to go out? No. Hundreds, if not thousands of people do solo trips perfectly safe. That being said, if you are doing solo trips, make sure that people know where you're to. You've planned. Make sure you have the extra protection, better first aid kit. Take bear spray and stuff like that. Make sure that you've taken the things in case something does go wrong to be there. And even setting up camp, make sure you don't eat real close to where you're sleeping. It'll attract animals. They may come coming around and you corner them. Most animals, by the way, will never attack unless you corner them. Most.
Very true. There is some aggressive animals depending on where you're at. But yeah, you're right, Ben. Most animals, they don't want any more trouble than they can bite off. You know what I mean? Most animals, most species globally, they're not going to pick a fight. You know what I mean? Most things do not want to have the potential of getting injured themselves in any kind of confrontation. Humans are no different. I mean, once again, there are some animals out there. They're just, you know, they're bastards. They're aggressive. Hornets come to mind. But yeah, generally.
In 40-something years, I'm not going to say how many, but I'm going to admit to being over 40 at this. In 40-plus years, how many animal attacks do you think I've had?
Do bees count?
I don't know if I've been attacked by bees. Not aggressively. I may have been stung a couple of times, but not, and I've never been swarmed.
Then I'm going to say maybe 2 or 3, and I'm going to bet most of them were domesticated animals.
So, well, I did flyers for a while, and a couple of dogs did bark at me and run aggressively. I think one bit my rubber boot. That was about it. I've rarely been attacked by even domestic animals. The one attack I can think of quickly, other than the gray jay that brutally tried to kill me, was actually a groundhog, and it was at the Halifax airport.
You and I talked about this before. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I was just out for a walk, and I walked around the end of the bus stop in Halifax Airport. Anyone who's been to Halifax Airport knows where that bus stop is. I would walk up that every day and walk around it. This one time when I came around the corner, there was a groundhog between the little concrete, you see them in the driveway, like, I don't know what you even call it, a pylon. It's a long beam that you just put so people don't drive.
Just like over curb, it. Basically, like a mobile curb.
It was wedged between that curb and the bus stop. And when I came around the corner, I guess it was too close, and he jumped at me and snarled. And I stepped back a couple of steps, and he kept snarling at me, and I just walked away. I left the thing alone because, honestly, I didn't want any smoke from that thing. And that was the end of it for
And that's
me.
the thing. Generally, once again, we're using some general terms here. That was just a show. He was trying to intimidate you, get you to go away, probably out of fear. The old adjective, they're more scared of you than you are of it, really does apply. Everything has a healthy respect to being alive. Nothing out there wants to be unalived. You know what I mean? So they'll try and make themselves look a little more frightening, try and scare you off and things like that. There are some animals where, depending on what it is, there's different ways you should back away from them. Bears being one of them and stuff like that. We'll probably talk about that a little later. Briefly, we're not bear experts, so we're not going down that poisonous path. But the groundhog, I'm thinking like even raccoons, beavers, things like that, common animals that you're going to see out there in the woods. A lot of times they'll do what's called bluff charging. They'll make a charge at you and stop just a little short. It's a show of aggression, but it's also a show of intimidation. They're just trying to get you to go away, show that there's a little bit of dominance in there. So here's where we come down to that healthy respect for the wildlife around you. If you notice a lot of animal attacks, and I'm not going to say all, but a good significant portion of animal attacks is because the humans involved were purposely trying to get closer to the animal than they were comfortable with. Generally, to get a picture or to try and pet something, or because they thought it was cute, or they're going to try and feed them, or something like that. They're not giving that healthy distance to the creature in mind. And this kind of goes with a topic we're going to talk about in future weeks here. There's some etiquette in the woods. The animals generally don't come up and try and get in your face. They leave you alone. Pretty good idea. You should do that to them. You know what I mean?
Put it this way, if you were walking through town and you seen another human being that you didn't know, would you walk up and touch that human being? How would that go? If you stood next to him and took a picture, how would that go? It's really not that much different. You walk up to a moose or a bear or a coyote and you get so close and you're waving things in the front of them or you're touching them in ways that they're not comfortable with, you should expect to get bit. You
Yeah.
should expect to get headbutt or kicked. These are things that you asked for. That being said, hungry animals, especially animals that have been fed by humans, will lose fear and will approach you. By feeding them or encouraging this behavior, you are just making it worse. So do not fling food at them and walk away. They now learn that when they come close enough, humans will provide food.
And that's the thing. I mean, these creatures have been living in the woods. They know how to survive in the woods. When you get in there and screw stuff up, it really screws up the dynamic of those animals in the woods. And I'm sure we've talked about this in the past too. Feeding ducks. There's problems with that everywhere because ducks are supposed to migrate. People will go into these parks, they'll start feeding them. The ducks hang around longer than they should. Things get too cold too fast, and now they haven't flown far enough in the distance. And a lot of these animals end up dying because things have been screwed up by us wonderful people getting in there and doing stuff we probably shouldn't be doing. So yeah, don't try and get close to these animals while you're out there in the woods because you should have a healthy respect. Not necessarily a fear. These animals aren't going to be flying out of the woodwork and trying to not, kill you while you're out there. That's not their intention. They just want to go about their business. We're intruding on their property, basically. So imagine if somebody walks across your yard. It may irritate you, but you're probably not going to run outside chase them with a baseball bat. Now imagine somebody comes into your yard, starts knocking on your door, better yet, comes into your house, and then starts trying to pet you. Now you're gonna get agitated. You know what I mean? There's limits to this stuff, folks. And I know it sounds silly, but this is the reality. A lot of people go out in the woods with this mentality. So it's definitely worth spreading around, and hopefully our little joking session here reaches lots of people and they can have a laugh about it, and maybe it'll stop some people from trying to pet the groundhogs. Because what is a real danger out there is if you do get approached by an animal in any way, shape, or form, the potential diseases that animal could have. And there is a couple diseases that do affect an animal's rationality. So if you are around animals that are trying to approach you, without being so cautious, there's a couple things going on there, and I'm sure you're going to back me up on this, Ben. As you said, we don't feed animals while we're in the woods. Okay, a lie. I may, you know, put a piece of bread out for a bird. Should I? Absolutely not. But I generally don't get into the habit of feeding any kind of real wildlife out there, like not even the rabbits and squirrels and stuff like that, because as we said, it screws everything up. So generally, those animals aren't coming to you actively looking for something, especially when you're in a remote location. As Ben had mentioned earlier, if they're starting to approach you, and I'm thinking town deer. If you don't know what the term town deer is, it's a term out here just as it sounds. It's the deer that usually live in and around town. These deer tend to have zero fear of humans, industry vehicles, or anything like that. And it's not uncommon for them to approach humans because they know that humans have food or they have bird feeders or whatever. You know what I mean? But if you're out in the woods and it's not really a lot of people floating around and animals are starting to approach you, there's a couple warning things that go off in my head. One, maybe they're just looking for food, and this is what I try to think off immediately. So don't engage with them. Don't start talking to them. Don't try to give them food, stuff like that. Generally, I try to avoid. If they continue to follow, now I'm starting to look for things that could be affecting its judgment. The big one that's coming to mind for me is rabies. I don't know if you have seen there, Ben, but recently there was an attack just in the northern states down there. Somebody got attacked by a coyote that had been tested positive for rabies. And here's the numbers, folks. I think they said it was like the third or fourth time in 30 years in whatever state this was. And I can't remember it off the top of my head. I should have brought the thing up. I heard this on the radio anyway. That's how infrequent it happens. But one of the things they were saying was this coyote just out of the blue started following this foe. You know what I mean? And, you know, he didn't recognize all the necessary signs there. Animal was, you know, shaking its head a lot. It just wasn't acting like a wild animal should. And I don't know how to describe that unless you've seen it. Something I seen a lot off here was distemper. There was distemper that ran through raccoons. I don't know if any folks out there know about or have seen a show called Hope for Wildlife. It's a rehabilitation center that's here in Nova Scotia. When I worked at Nova Scotia, we had, we had worked with her bringing over several animals and stuff like that for rehabilitation and things like that. At one time, distemper had run through there through the raccoons. Once distemper gets in, it does really run rampant. And it causes a lot of same things. Like the raccoons just don't act like normal wild animals. And you can tell something's up. And if you get that inkling that something just ain't sitting right, don't play with it. You know what I mean? It's not the, oh, what's wrong, little guy kind of mentality. It's like, all right, I got to keep my distance. You are another creature out there in the food chain when you're playing in the woods. Once again, you shouldn't be terrified off it. But there are some ground rules. You know what I mean?
I remember another one. It was some kind of, like, I want to say parasite that used to get into, like, caribou and stuff. And it basically shut a lot of their mental processes down. And they would act really slow and pardon the word, stupid.
That goofy. Like, they do weird things that just don't make sense. Another big one that we have, New Brunswick and other states, I'm thinking maybe it's a problem out there with you too, Ben, is brainworm. And it affects the moose in our area over here, and I imagine it's probably getting into the caribou and stuff in the area you're at. You got caribou or elk? I can never remember what's out there.
There's elk out here, but there's caribou up north, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, so maybe you have both there, and it may be affecting them too, and it causes a lot of weird things. Now, the brain worm itself is not contagious to humans, but it is going to make that animal act more aggressive than normal, but it's going to give some signs. You know what I mean? Instead of trying to avoid people like most ungulates, hooved creatures do, this thing's going to be just wandering around with no rhyme or reason. It's just going to act, as Ben said, really weird, goofy. You know what I mean? So these are signs we watch out for, and these are when we give things healthy distances. We don't need to be afraid of these things. There's no reason, and every time somebody says, oh, I can't believe you go into the woods, I'm terrified the animals are going to eat me or whatever, right? You don't need to be terrified. The likelihood of that happening is astronomically low. We're talking like airplane crash kind of low. You know what I mean? Providing you play by the rules. And the rules are, don't pet the wildlife.
Don't pet the wildlife. Don't feed the wildlife. You know, when you're setting up camp, you know, set up a good clean camp. When you put your fire ring in and stuff, or your fire, you know, pay attention. Don't sneak up on animals, you know. Don't be afraid to make a little bit of noise and let them know you're there. And also keep your head a bit on a swivel. And by that, I mean keep an eye out for things because you'll notice the dangers long before they happen. The wildlife will talk to you in their own way, and so you will notice the birds will change when different animals are in the area and stuff, and other things. The mood of the forest will change, and
Oh, the
you will come to,
two
in
biggest
tune with
tattletales
this.
in the woods are gray jays and squirrels.
Yeah, they will yell at you. They will tell on you. So yeah, but stay away from that. Animals aren't generally a danger unless you're doing something to put yourself into danger. And that being said, when you do hear of accidents, it's oftentimes where people have come between a mother and her young, or cornered an animal where it didn't feel like it had a safe way to escape, and then they'll choose through you, and that's a no-win situation. Generally, for somebody's getting hurt. So if you can give the animal the respect and the space it deserves, and if you feel like you are cornering one, back up and allow them to leave, and it'll generally go well. I still recommend things like bear spray. It's not all that expensive. I keep a couple of cans around. I have right there in a holster. I didn't carry it as much in Nova Scotia as I do now, because there is more wildlife here that could potentially be effectively dangerous. But I still have the first two bottles I bought, and I've never had to use them. And I do not expect to have to use them anytime soon.
No, and that's the thing. Once again, healthy respect, you don't necessarily need to fear. Like when we used to go out west with natural resources, sleeping in camps and stuff, they'd always give us big warnings on rattlesnakes and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And once again, have a healthy respect. Like I'm terrified of snakes anyway. A snake is like the greatest demon thing on the planet to me. Absolutely hate them. That and spiders. But anyway, I still never had one chase me down in the woods. You know what I mean? I've seen them. I've given them a healthy, good girth of room around them, but I've never had one actively chase me. So
And
I. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I think this comes back to head on a swivel. When you step over something, look at where you're stepping, you know?
Exactly. And that's the thing. Just pay attention. Have healthy respect. They give healthy respect. So we did have talked about animals, and I did want to touch on that one because that's the big one we hear all the time. Now there is another danger out there in the woods that plays on fears, and this is a psychological fear. And we've talked about this before in the previous episodes, and it's what goes bump in the night. You know what I mean? This is generally where fears start building, irrationality starts building. You're laying in your hammock, you're laying on your cot, you're laying in your makeshift shelter, whatever. And all of a sudden, you start hearing all these little noises going off. Oh my gosh, what is that crashing through the woods? It's probably a mouse or a squirrel. A squirrel sounds like a bull moose going through the woods in the middle of the night. Like, it is unwieldy how much noise they make. But it's
And the
because
bull
you're kind of
moose?
heightened as well, you know what I mean?
The bull moose, you're not going to hear
No, that's the thing. The bigger an animal is, generally the less noise it makes. Or it's going to make other noises. It's not the cracking and the leaves and stuff like that really worry me. It's when I actively hear like blowing noises or bleeding noises or something like that. You know what I mean? That generally alarms me. But unless you're hearing that stuff, most likely it's just something going for a stroll in the woods. It doesn't really know you're there, or it acknowledges you there, most likely, and it's just giving you its room. You know what I mean? And there is some ways you can combat this, and some of that is camp somewhere or go somewhere where there's a little white noise. So Ben and I went to the waterfall before, you know what I mean? That definitely canceled out any noise you're gonna hear in the woods. You know what I mean? That creates its own other psychological issues. You start hearing other things, you know what I mean? Because now, and we've talked about this before in the past too, running water in the middle of the night can sometimes sound like voices and stuff, you know what I mean? And it's not going to sound like Ben and I sitting here having a conversation with you. It's going to be like these distant whispers that you just can't quite make out because, once again, your psychological mind plays on these noises. And there's this thing called matrixing where we try to make something out of nothing, essentially. And we try to make something familiar out of nothing. And what's more familiar than ourselves and what we do every day. We interact with people every day, and we see faces every day. We see outlines of bodies every day. So this is the first thing that our brains start jumping to when we start seeing shadows off in the distance, or we hear this gurgling water perhaps flowing over something hollow underwater. You know what I mean? Like if water moves over a cup and a little bit of air gets in there, it can make a noise that'll travel up through the water. And I swear this sounds like a whisper. But it doesn't sound like a whisper. It literally sounds like water gurgling. But you don't recognize the water gurgling. It's, oh, that sounds like a whisper. And all of a sudden you look into the shadows and you see a tree leaned up against another tree that's very loosely looks like a humanoid figure, and then imagination start running wild. You know what I mean? Now it's aliens, or it's Buffalo Bill, or it's Bigfoot, or it's whatever.
Fairies. And
The stories I've heard.
Yeah. And I think this is where some of the stories of like fairies and gnomes and mystical creatures come from. Because if you spend enough time in the woods, you're going to hear those whispers and talking and things off in the distance that don't quite seem right. And you're right, it probably is a very logical thing, but when it's just you at night and you're tired and probably not as energetic and your mind's going and you're half in a dreamlike state anyways, you can very quickly put yourself in a very nervous position where your brain feeds off of it. But generally, you're right. There's not much to fear for that. What I have experienced, and I think you may have too, is I have been in the woods when people have approached.
Yes. And by far, that is more terrifying than any animal.
Yeah. We, me and a buddy of mine, we were in a bunch of lakes in backwoods in Nova Scotia. We were heading out, and I think we spent 2 nights in this trip. And the first night we sat up on the side of a lake, found a beautiful little beach spot. We sat up on it, and we didn't think we were close to anyone or any roads or anything. And all of a sudden we heard a couple of ATVs buzz by, and a couple of guys stopped, and they couldn't have been more than a couple of 100 feet away. And you could hear that they were drinking and throwing beer bottles around. And we were sitting there thinking, should we let them know we're here? Should we just shut the hell up? What should we do? And then 15, 20 minutes later, they left, and we didn't have to do anything about it. But one of the things is, if we startled them, how would they react? You know, chances are they're just a couple of good old boys that will have a couple of chats, maybe offers a beer. Or
they could be half snapped and think you're Bigfoot.
Yeah, and take a shot at you. You may scare them, and you don't know what a scared person will do. So in that particular instance, like I said, we decided to do nothing and wait it out and see if we had to. And eventually they just drove off and everything was fine. And, that worked out good for us. But yeah, the next night, same trip, parked near Scout Island was what it was called. A bunch of people playing airsoft showed up and started shooting and throwing grenades and stuff around us. This is a real trip.
And, you guys had some excitement on that run.
We did, honestly. And my buddy, he had a couple of fireworks, and he decided to fire them off and gave them quite a fright. And they're like, what the hell was that? There's people on the island. They started running off. You could hear them going over the bridge. And we got up, made breakfast. We got in a canoe, and we drove paddled all the way around the island, like a full 360. And we went by them, and we were waving like this.
And that's the thing. You can have a lot of fun out there too, folks. Don't be creepy about it. But I mean, sometimes you can have some fun.
Oh, no. Be creepy.
Be creepy. Oh, yeah. Definitely be creepy. Kind of got off left field. Oh, yeah. Here. Chris Loveless has a comment from the side here. I recommend if you like solo camping, getting a dog to go with you. Great comfort and protection, and generally scare most other animals off, including bears or a goat. And this is one of the things I was going to say. The ultimate thing in the woods to help stabilize and center you, it's companionship, and however you want to get it, go with a buddy, grab a dog is a great example. I know you've gone camping with your dog. When Mel and I have gone out, when we used to have our very first dog, baby girl, we used to take her all the time, and you'll notice that a dog, and specifically a dog, because that's the only experience I have, I've never taken a cat, but I assume they may be the same or any other animal, they pick up on danger a little bit quicker than you would. They may pick their head up and look around and be wondering what noises are and things like that. But I know for an instance, a dog generally will just kind of twitch its ears and kind of keep an ear on everything. Until a dog is startled, don't really bother anything. You know what I mean? If the dog's not worried, you probably shouldn't be worried. They got a better sense of smell. They got a better sense of hearing. Trust them.
Anyone who's camped with me has probably camped with Molly. I miss Molly. Molly was an awesome camping dog. And it had such a level of comfort. And when you're alone or even when you're there with friends and, you know, they come sit next to you, they will bark. They can be very loud. They will help protect you if you ever need it. But for the most part, they offer that second person, and I'm going to use that word, I'm going to stick by it. They are a second person. In fact, I've had better conversations with my dog than I have with some human beings.
Oh, absolutely. When I was younger, I had a German Shepherd named Sheba, and she used to come with me everywhere in the woods. And just like you, I bet you I talked to that dog more as a person than I talked to other people in the years that I had her.
Yeah, no, just an awesome thing. I cannot recommend a dog for being outside enough. If you have room in your life and the facilities to take care of a dog, they are an awesome companion in the woods. I don't think anyone would argue that. I have preferences of the type of dog I would want, and everyone will have their own preferences. I am going to go out on a limb and say the tiniest dogs may not be your best choice, and the biggest dogs may not be your best choice. But a medium-sized dog is, you can carry it. It will offer some protection. Small dogs, you may have to help. They're still great companionship, and they'll still alert you, but they may attract some other animals. And really big ones can eat and take the effort of a human being.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. Sheba, being a German Shepherd, I don't want to say she was a handful in the woods because she was really good, but there was a lot of effort in maintaining a dog that size in the woods. Now, on the flip side of stuff, Baby Girl, who was a Boston Terrier, which was the first small dog I'd ever owned in my life, was an absolute adorable thing to have in the woods and a ton of fun. But other than the actual just alerting you, it was pretty much useless in a fight. You know what I mean? And there was some special considerations there. I had to make sure she didn't get into any water too much, because literally a dog that small can swim out so far, they get tired and then they drown. Or they'll get in water and swept away. Or things you don't have to necessarily worry so much about with the bigger dog, you definitely have to keep an eye on with a little dog. Little dog can disappear down a hole and then they're gone. But at the same time, my German Shepherd got her head stuck in the crook of a stump, and it took me 8 hours to get her out of the woods one day. So,
I mean, I had the miniature poodle, Molson. Molson was a great dog. I loved taking Molson with me. And, he could do a lot. Molly was about twice the size of Molson. I found Molly was better able to carry herself through the woods and worked. But German Shepherds still not really. I mean, they're a fair sized dog, but they're not the biggest.
No, what am I thinking? Not a
Burmese Mountain Dog.
Yeah, a Bernese Mountain Dog. That's what I'm thinking. That'd be a big dog.
Or a Newfoundland?
Oh, a Newfoundland dog would be huge, or a Saint Bernard, or even a Great Dane. That's a big animal. The way I try to justify it is, one, you should be able to carry whatever animal you're gonna take into the woods in case they get injured and you need to get them out. There is kind of a give and take on that. If you're bringing this animal into the woods and something happens, you can't abandon it. You have to get it out of there. So you have to have the ability to carry that thing out or get it out of the woods somehow. And the other side of that is being able to pick it up. It may want to sleep with you. So it should be small enough you're comfortable to sleep with it in whatever your sleep system is. If you're in a tent, then it, you know, all bets are off. Maybe they'll just sleep on a pad beside you or something like that. But if you're in a hammock sleeper, like Ben and I, and they decide they want to jump in for the night, you got to have some considerations there. They do offer a lot of heat, though. I know you've said that yourself, Ben. They work like a little furnace.
Oh, Molly was great. Molly, if you get Molly into the hammock with you and she curled up and she'd lay on your chest, your nose, her nose would be right next to your cheek. And it was like the small fire was breathing on your cheek, and she would heat you up. And she wouldn't move the whole night. She'd just lay there nice and calm and relaxed. When it was time to get up, she'd wiggle a bit and she'd get out, she'd go do her business. And it was a great fun. I highly recommend a dog. I've never known anyone to take a cat. I'm not sure how much
I know
protection a
somebody
cat will
out there,
offer.
if I search it, somebody's going to have taken something weird and wild into the woods. So, I mean, companionship is companionship at the end of the day.
I think you
Regardless of how much
mentioned
security they give you, companionship still means something.
a goat. I mean, I know people have went with horses
I have
and
camped with
donkeys.
horses. This is something I have done.
These are obviously, these are animals that can carry you in and out and carry your load for you. And they will also offer a fair amount of protection. They're a large animal. Not much will openly attack a horse.
No, but if they get spooked and decide to run, you just got yourself into a world of crap.
Yeah.
And this has
Right.
happened. I have been in the middle of the night, something decided to spook my mare, and I have spent the night tracking her down. Like, there is. Weigh your options, folks. That's all I can say. Don't get me wrong. It was an absolutely wonderful experience, and I would not have traded it, and I would do it absolutely again. But I still curse to this day or walking through the woods looking for that damned horse. You know what I mean? Like.
No, I can picture it. So yeah, animal companionship, there's definitely something to be said for that. Obviously we are biased towards dogs, but I think for good reason.
We have the Drifting Spore join us in the comments, and he's saying he's going to be our 500th subscriber, so that's kind of cool. Thank you very much there, sir.
Neat.
Chris Loveless, there was a bear in Lake Tahoe named Frank the Tank. He was a black bear, but he was so big from eating human food. We're talking 800 plus pounds. So that's a big black bear, man. And I mean, if you've ever been to Shubenacadie here in Nova Scotia, it's our wildlife park. It's kind of centrally located in the province. The bears there are big. They're a big bear because they're getting fed by humans. And they don't do a lot through the day. They just kind of laze around. They're not going to go looking for their food. It was actually so bad at one point, they were like, okay, we need to start weaning these bears back a bit because we could be causing some actual problems to these things. And I think since that has been taken care of, but there was some concern at one point over the weight of these bears. And this is what happens. They get used to human food. And human food is very high in calories and generally tastes really good. You know what I mean? Comparatively to things you're going to find in the woods. Are you going to sit down and eat, thousands of blueberries or pounds of blueberries or raid one green bin? You know what I mean? Like, it's a no-brainer. Most animals are lazy by nature. Almost any living thing is lazy by nature to some degree. Nobody wants to
Huh.
go out of their way to put in extra effort to get minimal reward. Generally, we like to have some sort of balance there.
A bear's goal is to get as fat as it can so it can make it through winter, right?
Exactly.
And expending a whole bunch of calories to gain calories isn't good math. And they understand instinctively that if they can eat 100 pounds of food, that will fatten them up. It's way better than trying to eat 100 pounds of blueberries that they have to spend a whole day to accumulate. And anyone who's picked blueberries knows it can take a long time to pick 100 pounds of them.
Just writing a message here.
Here's something you really should be afraid of. It's drinking non-clean water.
Yeah. And this is the thing. Drinking on clean water, if it can affect you very quick. Don't get me wrong. There is some stuff that it'll shoot through you and you'll have the old coffee squirts out the back. But generally, real bad things. I'm thinking Giardia, Streptococcus, things like that. That's going to set in later. So you'll be drinking this
Yeah.
water thinking everything's fine for a couple days. You'll start feeling sick, and then you're like, oh, it can't be the water. I've been drinking it for like a week. No, it's the water. You know what I mean? Beaver fever's real, and it takes about a week to sink in, and it is bad once you have it. I mean, it's very survivable, providing you have the resources. You have to be somewhere where you can recover and you can get some fluids into you because dehydration is the biggest thing. You can be surrounded by water, but if it's coming out both ends, you can still die of dehydration very easily.
Oh man, I watched guys suffer from it. I never had it myself. I was smart enough to carry my own water. The crew I was with decided to take gas over water, and they suffered. They suffered pretty bad for a few days, and they were pretty weak when they got recovered enough to come back to work. They were not as strong as they were when they started. It took a few days for them to gain their strength and endurance back up. So that can be life-threatening in a dangerous situation. And with everything, how do you mitigate that? Boil your water, filter your water.
Yep, filter goes a long way, and when in doubt after the filter, boil it again if you want. And then you're 100% safe. You know what I mean? The filter, it does, like, especially the Sawyer Minis that we use here, it filters out 99.999% of anything that we're going to have to worry about here. You know what I mean? The only thing caveat I would say on that is, like, if there is some sort of industry or farm up wake or upstream, yeah, you still may want to avoid the water. There's a lot of chemicals and stuff that can leach in that's still not going to pull because it's just so fine. But when it comes down to like the bacteria and viruses and stuff like that, it's going to do a great job. If at the end of the day you're still a little unsafe, it's going to do a good job of pulling the sediment out, and you can still boil the water. So I mean, whichever way we're going to go. I know I have used just the Sawyer Mini in lakes and rivers around here, and I've been with you, Ben. You've seen, well, you've done it with me, and we have not boiled the water, and we've been perfectly fine. It doesn't get rid of tastes. Keep that in mind.
Like you said, it gets rid of viruses, bacteria, cysts, and other biologicals. It will not get rid of poisons and toxins.
Exactly. So that's why tannin stays in there. You can filter water through a Sawyer Mini, and it may come out a little brown because there's potentially just high tannin in the water. I'm thinking the waterfall where you and I went, that water was always a little brown. It wasn't dirty. The filter definitely is small enough to pull out any kind of dirt. It's tannin. And tannin just makes a bitter taste. I mean, it doesn't hurt you. Maybe in mass quantities, it might upset your stomach, but it's just gonna taste a little bitter. Now, the lake water, when we filtered it there, that was actually really clear once it was all
Yeah.
said and done.
Just that is something to be a risk. The other thing, from an animal point of view, mosquitoes and other biting flies, they also can carry disease and problems. Plus, I have been swarmed by flies, not bees, but flies. And honestly, that is psychologically damaging. They can overwhelm you to the point where you start to want to shut down.
Insects actually pose a serious danger in the woods,
Yeah.
psychologically, and just the bug bites and stuff. Once you start getting covered in bug bites, you get a real one. There's the absolute physical discomfort off it. Nobody likes to be itching all the time, but then as you're scratching and things get opened up, you start running a real risk of infection because you're already in an outside environment where you can't necessarily keep things as clean as you would like to. Infection leads to other problems. I mean, depending on how bad the infection is. Now you can start looking at fevers. It can make you sick. You can get infections of the blood. Like this stuff can go bad from minor things. Likelihood, not high, but something to be aware of. Bring bug spray. You know what I mean? Or take something that's going to keep the bugs off you. One of those net jackets, whatever. Keep the bugs off you. Solve the problem.
The one thing I'm going to say is environment plays a big part with biting insects. Staying around stagnant water, high risk. Bogs, marshes, things like that, there's a lot more mosquitoes and stuff. Larger lakes where there's wind and stuff, it'll tend to stay away from that. Plus, if they have laid in lakes, the fish have been eating them. But these stagnant pools and ponds, they are a spot where the mosquitoes can flock to and breed quite a lot. So yeah, you'll often want to find a place where it's a bit breezier, where the flies have to work a lot harder to stay around you. And they will also tend to avoid the hottest part of the day and the coldest part of night. They'll come out generally near the twilight spots. So a little after sun break and just before sundown, I find them to be usually the worst.
Yep.
And once the sun goes down, they usually peter off a lot. So understanding when they come and where they're coming from and learning to avoid those times will help. So those are times when it's good to take a nap, you know?
Absolutely. And when it comes to trees and stuff, bugs are more likely to be around softwoods than hardwoods, generally, not always, as well as if there's a lot of duff in the area. So this could be, deciduous trees, hardwoods where their leaves have fallen off and have packed up a lot underneath them. You're going to get a lot of bugs in that area too. Not necessarily flying bugs, but some sort of creepy crawlies that are going to be crawling around, especially if you're going to be sleeping on the ground and stuff. Ticks is another big one that comes to mind. You know what I mean? So, but once again, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Just bring some bug spray. Or I don't know about you, Ben, and I think we've talked about this before too. Once you get a fire going and you kind of get that smoke soaked smell, the bugs tend to
Yeah,
die
boy.
off a little bit too.
Yeah, I've done the smoky fire pit, like where you start a small fire and you put like green grass or boughs and stuff on top of it and let it smoke. It'll definitely cut the number of insects down a lot. They'll still avoid that area. You can put it, a couple of spots around your campsite, but then you're oftentimes in the smoke, and that's not as enjoyable as you'd think. So, use these things, but yeah, good fly dope. There's different devices out there now too, thermal cell type things, like I think Flextail and Off both make ones where you can, there's a little battery, heats up a little element, it releases a chemical. Citronella candles, you can put those around your site, they'll help avoid it. I think they say the blue Listerine, put that in a spray bottle and spray around your campsite. Generally, they'll avoid that area. These methods do work.
What works really well for children, you can go on Amazon, and when I say children, I mean generally under 10.
And
They make
you.
these little patches that
Yeah.
just, you stick them on your kids, and they actually work, and they're not super expensive. I think I bought like 300 of them for $30 for Lily last year. The downside to this is I don't find that they keep year to year. Whatever you don't use this year is pretty much shot by next year. Because I've been buying them for a couple years now on the recommendation of a few other parents that Mel works with. And it seems like every year, if I try to use the year priors, they just don't work. Get a fresh batch, right back to working good. So I don't know if maybe that's the way I'm storing them. I am reading the instructions as well as I can, being broken English, but I mean, whatever. I think I'm doing it right.
Throw them in the freezer, buddy. Throw them in the freezer.
Well, I've tried freezing some. I've tried vacuum sealing some. I don't know if maybe it's the chemical in it just breaks down over time or what's going
Could
on.
be. Yeah, I've also seen you can get these little foam dragonflies to put on the brim of your cap. People say that really works.
Not so much for mosquitoes. That works for horse flies really well.
The other.
Dragonflies, their primary food is flies. Like house flies, things like that, they tend to stay away a little more often.
Yeah, and the other thing is they used to say the fabric softener sheet right under your hat will also help keep them away.
I
So
worked with. Oh, sorry.
things with strong smells will oftentimes push flies away, but there are some smells, bananas, that will attract them. So be I know that's your favorite trick.
I keep getting people every year with a bite, and it keeps getting funnier every year, too. There's definitely a spot for me in hell just on that whole trick alone.
But yeah, be aware of what attracts them and what keeps them away, and that'll help. So yeah, animals generally not a huge risk. Be aware of animals' behaviors and homes and try to avoid them. If there's animals you're particularly afraid of, learn a bit about them. That should help you alleviate those fears and better prepare to how to mitigate them. If you're afraid of rattlesnakes and there's rattlesnakes in the area, find out where do rattlesnakes hang out. Where do they How do they hunt? How do they spend their days? When do they are they most active? When are they least active? A rattlesnake is out, not out there hunting you, but if you get in its way or you step on its tail,
It's
you might
gonna
get bit.
react. You know what I mean?
Right? Steve Irwin got taken out by a
Stingray.
ray, stingray.
And it wasn't trying to attack him, it was just wrong place, wrong time.
Just the way he was handling it, or it happened to hit him in the heart. It risks happen. They're very rare, but the more you understand an animal and give it its space, the less likely you are to have its have your incident. We mentioned, unclean water. That's obviously something. Pets or companions of any type, people or otherwise, are obviously a help. But I think we should go back because we got about 10 minutes left. And I would like to quickly talk a bit about what we started talking about. And in your own self, you are probably the biggest danger to yourself in the woods. And let's talk a bit about this. As we talk, I'm looking at my screen. There's a beautiful picture of me in a kayak out on a lake. And it's one of my favorite things to do. Anyone who knows me knows I love the water. I love a nice kayak or canoe trip. It's hard to beat. Learn the risks. I have sunk a kayak in a lake. I have gone down streams that I probably should not have. I have taken risks and I have paid the price occasionally for doing those. I have been fortunate. Understand your own limitations. And if in doubt, figure out how to mitigate those risks. If you see something you're trying to climb, if you see a tree and say, oh, I should climb that. Think about it. Is that tree really strong enough to climb? Are you strong enough to climb
Risk versus
it?
reward. Why are you
Yeah.
climbing it? Just because it's there, or are you trying to get something out of it?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Just a couple comments from Danny here. I don't want them to flutter away. We're back to insect repellents. Smoldering egg cartons work well, and bounce sheets. The smoldering egg cartons do actually work really well, Danny. My in-laws, they have one of those little burners. They make little stoves. You literally just burn these things, and they swear by them.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to your point then. Yeah, your own mind is your worst enemy. Good and bad. You can get in your own head and make yourself all worked up over nothing, or you can push yourself past your capable limits. And you have to recognize what your capable limits are for anything you're going to do. And as Ben said, the only way to do that is to kind of figure it out before putting yourself in the danger. And I know you and I have talked about this before, and we're going to take boating for an instance again. You've sunk a boat not far offshore just to see what it takes to sink that boat.
I have.
And I did that. First thing I did with my canoe was get out there and start rocking it. How far can it go before it tips? How far can I lean it on its side before I become unstable? These are all things I played with in waist deep water. Not middle of the
Yeah.
lake, waist deep water.
I have gone out in 8, 9 feet of water and tried to see how easy I can get back on a canoe, how big or a kayak, how I can prevent my gear from disappearing when it flips. How do I keep everything safe and dry? How do I deal with all these problems? How do I move through the woods? I practice these things. If I create a new cart for my kayak, I've run through the woods with it in many ways to see what's going to work and what's not going to work. We always talk about testing our gear, and I think that's really important.
But
That
you,
being,
as a person, are a piece of gear in this equation. Know what
yeah.
you can do.
And once you learn those limits, stick to them. And this is one, this is a controversial one, but I'm going to bring it up. Alcohol and other drugs, and alcohol is a drug. We all have drank in the woods. I know many people that smoke weed and eat edibles and stuff. Do realize these have an effect on your ability to make good decisions.
Absolutely. They are called mind-altering drugs.
I think when they talk about drowning victims, I don't know the ones who are found drowned in boating accidents generally have been found to have been drinking. Oftentimes their pants are undone. So
Taking a
the
leak
one, the
and fell
boating,
in.
taking a leak and fell in off a boat, couldn't get back on, had too much to drink, were out there to have a good time. Do realize that when you're out there, especially by yourself or with only a couple of buddies, and if the two of you are having a few drinks, your likelihood of deciding to do something that maybe wasn't the smartest deal idea does increase. So the idea that you can jump into that lake or you can swim across that channel or you can do something that you probably can't do, and probably at 9 o'clock at night when it's dark.
And it doesn't have to be out in a lake either, folks. This is a real story. Somebody I knew, still know, I guess. I just haven't talked to them in ages. Down where I'm originally from, Barney's River area, there is a swimming hole there at the Iron Bridge, and it's not very deep. It's maybe like lower chest deep. You know what I mean? Nobody dive there. There's this tree with a crook in it. Nobody dives out of it because the bottom's too shallow. And once you get alcohol involved in here, people start getting braver and braver and braver and braver. Not only do you have this tree with a crook in it, there's a rock on either side of it. So we would always run and jump off this tree, but we always jump feet first in case anything ever happened. At least all you're doing is banging your legs up. Introduce alcohol. A couple of the older folks that were in our swimming party, they started deciding, okay, can we dive through here? And then eventually they would start diving and, oh, I can do this, I can do that. And all of a sudden somebody misses and lands headfirst into one of these rocks. Ended up breaking their neck. Didn't kill them, but I mean, they ended up wearing one of those fancy halos for like 6 months.
And we're not, you know, we are not your mother. We are not your grandmother. We are not anyone that's going to tell you what to do and not do in the woods. But I would like to caution you, if you are going to do it, we both have participated in a few beers in the woods, so we're not claiming to be better than anyone else. Just
oh, we're no aware saints.
Of the risk.
We just, once again, we know what our limits are. I'm not going out there with a 24 or 2.4 and hammering those all back and deciding to climb the waterfall. I think in both cases, we bring a few drinks out and we just kind of hang out reasonably and go to bed afterwards.
Yeah. But just keep in mind, keep that thought. I think it's a very legit thing. The risk does go up when you're doing these things. So it is one of the things that I would put in there. You know, again, you're probably your biggest risk. The likelihood of animals attacking you is not the greatest. Could you fall and hurt yourself? Absolutely, you could fall and hurt yourself. I am going to argue you can also fall and hurt yourself inside your own home.
I was going to say, living in Halifax, I watched somebody, you know, those little half walls that they have beside crosswalks. They just went to step down from one of those, tripped as they were going down, fell, smashed their face, shattered their jaw. You know what I mean?
Well, last year around Christmas time, I was down Langley area. Anyways, I was going to an outdoor store, believe it or not. What's the chance of that? And I crossed the road. There was a half wall to the parking lot. There was a pile of snow piled up. I decided I'll jump on that pile of snow and then I'll step out and I'll go into the store. It's going to be awesome. And I jumped into the snow. It was more rotten than I expected. My feet went straight to the ground. And I started tipping forward, but I couldn't move my feet because they were stuck in the snow. And my face met the pavement. And I had bruises on the two eyes, down my cheek. I was in quite the state, and I was bleeding. The store had to provide first aid to me. Accidents happen.
And once again, own worst enemy. Another story, Ben, just because we're in the last couple of minutes here, and everybody likes stories. Same as you, just walking through some of the snow. It wasn't this year. This was back when I used to live in my other location. Just walking through some snowbanks. They got up fairly high. I was trying to literally walk over the snowbank over a small fence. We're talking waist high again. So was snow was seedy, like you said. Foot slipped down, found the top of a fence post. Hit my knee, took out probably a quarter to loony size chunk of skin straight to the bone. Like, I mean, Melissa was with me at this point. Of course, she did not handle it as well as I did. But literally all I did was take one of my socks off, kind of shove the piece of skin back in spot, tie it up, and walk home. You know what I mean? But if I had been out in the woods, a very similar situation. I was only a 10-minute walk from home there. But if I was in the woods 2 hours back in the woods, that could be a completely different story. You know what I mean? But once again, I pushed myself a little more because I knew I was close to home. Should I have? Maybe not. Maybe the best thing I should have done was just sit still, have Mel go home, get the car, come back, pick me up. Because, I mean, it never really did heal correctly, and now I have a big scar and blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, I still got the use of the knee, so whatever. But, I mean, that could have been worse.
Everything you do in life, there is a thing you can do. And it's sort of like a risk-cost analysis. Look at what you're about to do and say, what is the potential gain by doing it? What is the potential risk? And when you see those risks, how can I mitigate that? One of the things that we have both done, a walking stick.
Yes.
And a walking stick is sort of like a dog in a lot of ways. It helps keep you a little bit safer. So when you're walking in the woods, and you probably won't do it in town, although if you have an infirmity, you may. But the average person does not walk around with a good walking stick. When you're walking in the woods, a good stick or hiking poles does a world of good. If it reduces the risk of you falling, or even if you do fall, the ability to catch and minimize that damage when you do fall. You can also test the ground ahead of you with the walking stick. You can use it to prop things over. You can use it to help jump a little bit further or clear. If you have to walk through water, you can use it to stabilize so you don't go down the stream. Something like that. Something as simple as that. Looking at what you're doing and saying, would this help? If you're in a boat, wear a life jacket. If you fall out, you're most more likely to float and be safe. Look
And
at
know
the
how to
risk.
use the life jacket, folks. That's the second part, is if you have a piece of gear, know how to use it.
If you're walking across ice, have ice picks. Have them in your hands. They're no good in your backpack. They're no good in your pocket.
Nope.
Right?
Just taught an ice rescue course not too long ago, and that was one of the things is if the ice picks aren't near your hands, are they really any good? Because by the time you fall through, you get cold, you recover your breath, you figure yourself out, your hands are already cold. You're not going to start digging in your pockets too successfully, let alone a
No.
backpack or something like that.
I did an ice rescue course years ago. I didn't do the whole thing because I wasn't jumping in the water because I'm not that brave. But one of the things that they talked about was a guy they found with every bit of proper gear to survive. And when they found him, he was struggling to get his pack off. He ended up drowning because the pack ended up locking his arms in a way he couldn't. And when they recovered him, everything he needed was in the backpack. But he had fallen through with a backpack on and couldn't get to it. Bear spray, same thing. I showed you that one. It has a belt loop. It goes on my belt. When I'm in an area where I think animal attack is likely, I put it accessible. When I'm riding my motorcycle, I have the bear spray with me. I have a spot on the bike where it can go, so I can get to it pretty quickly. When I get off the bike, I grab it and carry it with me. My knife, same thing. My knife is with me. It's a safety item.
So something that Danny said here is true too. The littlest thing can wreck a good adventure. Was at a nice waterfall, St. John, New Brunswick. Slipped on a loose stone, put his back out first day of the trip. Watch your footing. And that's the thing. We say this too when we're walking around in the woods. We don't. Well, when Ben and I are together, I know we walk a lot faster and harder than we probably should. Generally, if I'm soloing though, I take a little bit more time. My steps are a little bit more purposeful. I tend to look down a little bit more about where I'm walking. I use my walking stick significantly more. 'Cause it's true, it doesn't take much. One little, especially at our age, Ben, and I know you know what I mean. One wrong twist, and things creak and snap for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but all these little things. Look at the risks, identify what they are, and how do I minimize it? And whatever safety precautions you have to protect yourself, make sure that they're viable and, like you said, know how to use them. It's no point in saying, oh, I have a boat and I have a repair kit for the boat, and get out and you damage your boat and you're like, ah, don't know how to use it. And so now you've tried to put the patch on or the repair on, and the boat doesn't hold. You have a patch kit for your ATV, and you can't fix the tire because you've never done it. It's useless. Know how to use your gear. Know how to maintain your gear, and also have an escape plan. We've talked about some of the things we do lately. I carry now an inReach device so that if something does go wrong, the touch of a button, I can call for help.
And that's the thing, folks. There's lots of fears out there. Most of the dangerous things can one be prevented, and two are almost
None of it.
self-inflicted.
Should you be afraid of dirt? No. Should you be cautious and careful? 100%. Should you pr take preventative and supportive me methods? 100%. Are with these things, is going in the woods any more dangerous than walking to the store from your house? I would argue probably pretty similar, if not less.
I was going to say,
You're
you know my area around here. You're more likely to get attacked by a deer in town than you are in the woods, for sure.
Or end up in a car accident, or where I'm to, maybe not necessarily right here, but there's areas where I could easily get mugged. And less so in the deep woods, these things won't happen.
The
So.
closer to my house, the higher the likelihood. But no, it's true. Up. I mean, everything can be mediated. You know what I mean? You don't walk around bad parts of the neighborhood in the middle of the night. Don't go poking around. Well, yeah, I mean, so do I. But normally you don't. Don't go poking around bear dens during hibernation season. Yeah, you can have a healthy respect for everything that goes in the woods. I don't think there's a whole lot of real fears that the woods themselves generate. The fears come from ourselves. So you have to manage what is a fear, what is a danger, and is that danger enough to keep you from going out there? And the answer, more often than not, is it's not that big of a danger as long as you take some time and mediate the risks involved with it. You can still get out there, have fun, have a ton of great adventures, and you may still have a little fear. We all have some, you know, residual fear that resides deep inside us, that you have that uneasiness about a sound you hear at night because you're just not quite sure what it is, but the reality is it's probably never going to bother you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%. Anyways, we are well over an hour.
Yes, sir.
And so I'm going to tell people, get out there, have fun, know the risks, and deal with them appropriately. And like anything else in life, you should be able to enjoy it. All good things do have some risk. Whether you're into race car driving, snowmobiling, downhill skiing, ping pong, they all have a risk. Take the time to minimize them.
Night, everybody. We'll see you next week.